I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, sanctuary jurisdictions, including the city of Seattle, really fail to understand how not actively helping ICE is actually thwarting ICE. Plus, teachers in Washington State's wokest school district are encouraging people to file false reports to derail Donald Trump's efforts to dismantle DEI. And shock of the century, it turns out Washington's costly Climate Commitment Act isn't living up to its commitments. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, 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 and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A ton of good stuff. Bad stuff? Troubling stuff. Good, because we like talking about it. Bad, because it happens on the show today. But first, I want to start with this sanctuary city issue. So you might have watched some of it, but today there was a hearing in Congress where a few sanctuary city mayors were dragged in front of the committee to answer to their policies. Unfortunately, the mayor of Seattle wasn't one of them, but the mayor of Boston, Chicago, Denver, and New York were all there. So we're going to play some cuts from that conversation because the entire thing is very relevant to what we're dealing with here on the West Coast. California, Oregon, Washington, our sanctuary policies, which have been in place for some time, and how they are now in conflict with what the Trump administration is trying to carry out. And I will say, I don't know if you've heard this yet, but Seattle has joined a lawsuit with now 16 cities and counties that are sanctuary jurisdictions. It was started and is being led by Santa Clara County in California and San Francisco. And their argument is basically that Donald Trump wants them to do his job, essentially, which I disagree with. I'll describe that in a moment. But from the lawsuit, plaintiffs are not going to stand in the way of lawful federal immigration enforcement, but neither are they going to be bullied into abandoning their laws that have made their communities safer. Okay. Or doing what the federal government cannot compel them to do, actively assist the federal government in enforcing federal immigration laws. This from Seattle City Attorney Ann Davison, who is a Republican. I know she hasn't been a Republican for very long, but she won her seat as a member of the Republican Party. And I will say personally, I'm very disappointed to see her supporting this lawsuit and adding Seattle's name to the list of entities suing the federal government. She said in a statement, "This is an issue of federal overreach into areas of local control. Seattle's municipal government will not be co-opted to perform the federal government's responsibilities to enforce federal immigration laws." Here's the thing, though, and I think that I'm not saying that they maybe misunderstand how sanctuary policies actively do thwart federal immigration efforts, lawful federal immigration efforts. You know, I think some of them understand that it does, and that's why they implemented sanctuary policies to begin with. But, you know, you look at, before I get to that and sort of my legal argument against what these cities and counties are claiming, you know, look at what's been happening on the streets of Seattle and across Washington State with ICE. I mean, we have highlighted a number of arrests that ICE has made in and around Seattle of illegal aliens guilty of child rape, assault, domestic violence, drug dealing, resisting arrest, theft, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, these are bad dudes. I have yet to see the dramatic video of ICE operating in Seattle, going door to door, rounding up people who are in the country illegally, but who haven't committed crime since they've been here. I haven't seen that video yet. What I have seen are many, many instances of ICE Seattle, its partners with Customs and Border Protection, DEA, going around and rounding up people who are hurting citizens of the state of Washington. And so when I see, I mean, gosh, I just pulled up a couple from today because there's more. It's every day ICE is putting out stuff. How about Alonzo Lopez Mundo, citizen of Mexico, just arrested by ICE Seattle and U.S. Customs and Border Protection, convicted of assault, kidnapping, arrested for burglary and fraud. Is that really so bothersome to Democrats that we're getting kidnappers out of the state of Washington? How about this one? Blaine Sector agents assisted ICE In arresting Antonio Santiago Vasquez near Linden, Washington, a citizen of Mexico, he has multiple deportations and was previously arrested in Whatcom County for stabbing four people. Again, is that really so bothersome to Democrats? And is it really so much trouble to expect that local law enforcement, where federal immigration officials are trying to carry out these arrests, assist in any way they can? There's this odd separation going on before I get to some of what happened at the hearing. There's like a disconnect going on where these sanctuary cities believe that, hey, we're not going to thwart efforts. I mean, that's what Ann Davison said, right? That we're not going to be co-opted to perform the federal government's responsibilities. And in that lawsuit, it said plaintiffs are not going to stand in the way of federal immigration enforcement, but we're also not going to be bullied into abandoning our sanctuary laws. But by having sanctuary laws, you are in fact standing in the way of lawful federal immigration enforcement. And we'll hear some of this come up and be questioned about at the hearing today. But some of these sanctuary laws that explicitly prohibit the ability of local jurisdictions, local jails, local law enforcement, sheriff's offices to work with ICE makes it more difficult for ICE to do its job. I mean, that's the intent of them, right? And now that you're saying, oh, no, we're not interfering. We're just not going to help you out. Not helping them out is interfering. When you have a violent, dangerous, convicted criminal who's in the country illegally, and you won't hold that person at the jail or let ICE know, hey, here's when they're going to be released, and give them ample notice to scoop them up without incident, that's actively hurting the ability of ICE and the federal government to carry out its lawful immigration efforts. When you scrub all your databases so there's no telling if someone's in the country illegally or not, and for all intents and purposes, they're an American citizen, that thwarts the ability of ICE to know. You know, if there's a story on the news, for instance, of someone who, I don't know, stabbed four people, it should always be very obvious. This person's in the country illegally. We request that they're held without bail. And a judge could look at that and say, man, there's a likelihood that they might flee justice and go back to Mexico or to their country of origin because they're facing serious charges. But because of our system, it's not even listed there for the judge to see. The judge doesn't even know that that person is in the country illegally and therefore can't even weigh that in determining whether they should be held without bail or at a higher bail. So you tell me that's not you standing in the way of lawful federal immigration enforcement? There's also this weird disconnect, and I'll get to it here in a second with a clip from the mayor of Chicago, where these sanctuary jurisdictions believe that, oh, we're focusing on local law enforcement efforts. The feds are responsible for federal law enforcement efforts. So they're just doing their thing, and we're staying in our lane, and we're doing our thing, and we're enforcing our laws on the ground and arresting people. You don't think that there's overlap there? You don't think that criminal illegal aliens are directly related to your efforts, quote unquote, as soft as they may be, to keep your own streets and neighborhoods safe? I mean, just some of the ones we listed. Multiple people who were distributing narcotics. Fentanyl's killing people in record numbers on our streets. Don't you think helping ICE out with that directly helps your public safety efforts here? Someone who stabbed four people. Gee, don't you think that getting that person off the streets directly helps your public safety efforts here, not to mention makes the job of law enforcement much safer, considering that a lot of these people who've been picked up by ICE have been arrested for eluding law enforcement, have been arrested for assaulting law enforcement, for resisting arrest? The feds are doing your law enforcement agencies like the Seattle Police Department a favor by getting people who assault cops off the streets. And you guys are turning around and saying, we can't help you with that. In what world does that make sense? They want to conflate all of this as if they help, as if they help ICE get these dangerous people off the streets or hold them in jail and cooperate and hand them over, that it's the same as helping them go and round up children and families. It's nuts. So that takes me to this hearing in front of Congress today. May I just say, so again, this is a critical issue, no matter which way you slice it. if you want, if the Democrats at this hearing want to talk about this from a humanitarian perspective and want to lean in on the whole, oh, there's a lot of immigrants here who are vital to our economy. Yeah, they came here illegally, but they're not committing crimes. They're paying taxes. That's kind of what I'd expect Democrats to do in this hearing. I got to say, what I didn't expect for Democrats to do is to use a hearing on sanctuary policies to talk about the high cost of eggs under Donald Trump.
President Trump, if you're watching this hearing, I respectfully ask, when will egg costs be high enough for you to issue one executive order on bird flu? $10 a carton, $15 a carton. It'll soon be cheaper to buy a magazine for an AK-47 than to buy breakfast. This is flat out wrong.
During a congressional hearing on sanctuary cities, uses this time to talk about the high cost of eggs under Donald Trump. I mean, they're just unserious. This is a life or death issue. And they also want us to believe that it's like the humanitarian issue of our lifetimes, right? But he's talking about the cost of eggs. It's very strange. So also, one of the mayors in front of this committee was Chicago's mayor, Brandon Johnson. And this is just rich. Again, this goes to that. They're trying to bifurcate it. Oh, well, the feds are doing what the feds need to do. We're focused on local public safety. And here's what Brandon Johnson, like the murder capital of the world or of the country, has to say about that.
Without a criminal warrant, our local law enforcement focuses in on local issues to keep the people of Chicago safe.
How's that going? Not well. I would also say if you're focusing in on local issues and your concern is to keep the people of Chicago safe, then don't you think that you'd actively help the federal government in getting people who are a clear and present danger to the people of Chicago off the streets? So you'll help arrest criminals who are American citizens to help keep people safe, but you won't help arrest criminals who happen to be illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, to help keep the people of Chicago safe? That doesn't make any sense. And also, you're just doing a crap job. If you look at your gang issue, you know that you're doing a crap job when it comes to keeping anyone safe in your city. So I want to play for you a pretty lengthy exchange. Representative Jim Jordan is having this exchange with Denver Mayor Mike Johnston over a recent issue. And I want to play the whole thing for you because it's really important. It's relevant to what we're talking about here. When a city like Seattle and Seattle City Attorney Ann Davison says, hey, we're staying in our lane, you stay in your lane, and we're not thwarting their efforts, we're just not going to actively assist in the efforts. This exchange really shows how the failure to actively assist is in fact thwarting the efforts of ICE in making these sanctuary communities less safe.
Mayor Johnston, who's Abraham Gonzalez?
Thank you, Congressman. He is a individual that was released from the county jail on Friday in the city and county of Denver.
That's all you know about him?
I do know that he was facing charges that the
Venezuelan gang member arrested by Border Patrol on September 20th, 2023, released into the country by the Biden administration. A few months later, he's arrested in your city, charged with aggravated assault. On March 11th, 2024, he's charged with motor vehicle theft, stole a car. And then on March 20th, 2024, Mr. Gonzalez is charged with felony menacing. 6 days after that last charge, I send you a detainer which includes an administrative warrant. Basically, it says if you're going to release this bad guy, this gang member who allegedly stole a car, menaced people, and assaulted people, give us a 48-hour heads up. Is that right? That refresh your memory?
I do know about the detainer request. I do know that we provided a notification of release.
What kind of notice did you give ICE when you released him?
We gave him notification. I'm not sure how long in advance
hour.
It was. I do know that there was
1 hour notice. And you released him 5 days ago, right? Why not give him more heads up? Let's put the slide up. Let's see what it says here. Let's put the slide up. This is what the Denver Sheriff's Department, it's kind of hard to see, so I'll read it. It says, Denver Sheriff Department, ICE notification being released to the streets. I simply said, we want just release him to us. You release him to the streets. Why not release him to ICE?
Thank you. What we've done, and we do this regularly, we've done 1,226 of these, is we notify
I'm
us.
I'm asking about it, one. I'm not asking about the 1,200. I'm asking about Mr. Abraham Gonzalez, who's a gang member from Venezuela, stole a car, assaulted someone. You had him in your custody for how long?
I know that we released
345 days you had him in custody. And I said, hey, can you give us 48 hours heads up?
I don't know.
You gave him 1 hour notice.
Mr. Congressman, we notified them of release. There were six ICE agents present when he was released, so they had enough time to respond and to be present.
Respond where?
To the jail where we released him from. So we released him to, we notified them of the release time. When we notify them of release, they come to the jail facility to pick them up.
Why didn't you say that? That's not what you said. You said you released him to the streets. Did you release him to the streets? You released him to ICE.
What we do, sir, is we release him from our county jail, and we coordinate with ICE on that release time and release date so that ICE can come and pick them up from that location.
Pick them up where? In the parking lot?
Yes, sir. They're on the facility
property. Guess what happened in the parking lot?
I know, sir. I've reviewed the video. So I looked at it. I've talked to the sheriff last night.
ICE officers got assaulted, didn't he?
I've reviewed the video,
sir. They had to tase the guy, didn't they?
Would you like me to answer, sir?
No, I'd like you to answer. Did they tase him?
I know that there were six officers that had multiple tasers. I saw the detention on video.
So they had six officers? If you keep him in the facility and they come in the facility and get him, does it take six officers? Probably takes two, doesn't it?
So we've had, we've been doing these, as I mentioned, 1,224 times, 1,226 times. This is the first time I've been made aware of there's been an incident like this. So I reached out to ICE after I saw the video. I've coordinated with their team and offered to sit down and see if there are procedures we can change.
It's a simple question.
Make sure this works smoothly.
It's a simple question. You can release him in the parking lot, give ICE 1 hour notice, and they got to send six officers to arrest this guy. Or you can say, hey, what? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to hold him. You come in and bring two officers in, and you turn him over there. Why not do it that way?
We have a city ordinance.
You know why you don't do it that way?
We have a city ordinance that
governs. Because you're a sanctuary city. This is the whole point.
Exactly. So you take a situation and you put all these people in danger to push your ideology. So you've got a guy, known criminal, in the country illegally. ICE finds out he's in your jail. He's there for a year. And you give them 1 hour notice before you release him onto the streets, as it says in his release file. So that ICE officers have to get six people, go to the parking lot, make sure that they intercede him. And then there's a fight and one of the officers gets injured and the guy has to get tased. Because of the sanctuary policies and the ideology of Colorado, where they can't separate a situation like that from police going door to door, pulling people over for expired tabs and asking them about their immigration status. So you won't let ICE take him into custody in the secure facility where the situation can be under control, where it's safer for the officers, where it's safer for the community, and where it's safer for the illegal alien. Because now he got tased a bunch of times, and he assaulted an officer in the process, and what if he had gotten away? And then you have a manhunt on the streets of Denver because you are obsessed with this far-left ideology that doesn't make any sense, and you refuse to use any nuance when it comes to the situation. And that is the perfect example of how a city like Seattle isn't so innocent when it joins this lawsuit challenging Donald Trump's, threats to go after federal funding and stuff and says, hey, we're not thwarting anyone. We're just not going to actively assist. When you don't actively assist, you are, in fact, thwarting, making more difficult, making more dangerous the job of these federal immigration agents. Shame on you, especially considering. I'm disappointed in Ann Davison for this. I know she's the attorney for the city. I know that it's a sanctuary city. I know she has a certain obligation to protect laws and ordinances in the city of Seattle. But when she was elected, she was a pro public safety, law and order kind of person. I still want to believe that she's that person. But if you can't see that what ICE is doing at great personal risk to the agents in picking up child rapists, people who assault police officers, kidnappers, a guy who stabbed four people. If you can't see that that's an overall public safety good and do everything you can within reason to assist ICE in those efforts, that's not someone who values public safety and law and order. And it's just, I have a hard time wrapping my mind around that and comparing it to, again, the purpose we're told of sanctuary policies is, we want illegal immigrants to be able to call 911 and report crimes without fear that they might be deported. Or, we don't want the Seattle Police Department out there stopping people who with brown skin on the streets and asking them to show their papers. There's a lot of gray area between doing that and assisting federal agents in apprehending violent criminals who are in this country illegally. So I suggest you find a better place to sit in that gray area than where you're sitting right now. So speaking of efforts to thwart Donald Trump in his common sense policies, so you'll recall, we talked about it quite a bit, that one of the key efforts is trying to dismantle DEI in our public education system, certainly in the federal government. And if schools don't abandon their DEI efforts, there's the potential that they could lose federal funding. And so what the Trump administration smartly was concerned about is these DEI efforts being rebranded, kind of. Well, it's like, okay, we won't call it an equity lesson. We'll call it whatever this is, a love lesson. I don't know. So, and that has happened, and we've seen that, right? And so the U.S. Department of Education has this form you can go fill out on their website. It says, the U.S. Department of Education is committed to ensuring all students have access to meaningful learning free of divisive ideologies and indoctrination. This submission form is an outlet for students, parents, teachers, and the broader community to report illegal discriminatory practices at institutions of learning. The Department of Education will utilize community submissions to identify potential areas for investigation. So it says you can put the school or school district, zip code, and then describe in detail what's going on. So that's their way to figure out if schools are actively continuing their DEI efforts, but labeling them something else or hiding them, etc. Well, America's wokest school district, Olympia, which was the subject of our documentary, Operation Indoctrination, if you haven't watched it already, some teachers there are now actively encouraging people to make false reports to the Department of Education to spam their inbox and throw them off the trail, so they can continue to get away with their insane DEI stuff. This is from the Olympia Paraeducators. The Trump administration just launched a website where people can report schools engaging in DEI. Let's spam it to high heaven. It says, you know what to do. Want to make the Trump administration's lives a little harder? File a false report. Fill their inbox with total junk. Here are some suggestions to get you started. Transcribe the lyrics to Bohemian Rhapsody. Tell the White House about an interesting sandwich you once ate. Recite your favorite knock-knock jokes. See how many Best Actress winners you can name. Report a suspicious-looking bird you saw at the pier. File a harrowing claim regarding the three letters truly threatening America, IBS. Irritable bowel syndrome? Is that what they mean? It says, have fun with it. And look, not a surprise that within the Olympia School District, again, what I truly believe to be the wokest school district in the nation, that you would have teachers on social media encouraging people to actively spam the U.S. Department of Education so they can't filter through it and find legitimate concerns about ongoing efforts to push DEI. But at the same time, now you have, and this is just clear evidence, you have concrete examples of at least one school district in the state, we know there are many, actively working to not only resist publicly, but to undermine the president's executive order and his efforts to dismantle DEI. If that's not cause for the Trump administration to come in and investigate the school district, I don't know what is. And we have names, too. We got names of teachers, not just the general category of Olympia paraeducators, although there's probably not too many of those, and you can figure out who runs that social media account. How about Melissa Walker? She, they, her, him, her, them. She, they, her, them. Melissa Walker posts this website. Says it would be a shame if folks falsely reported a lot of this jibber-jabber. A lot of jibber-jabber on this. Melissa Walker. Okay. She, they, her, them. Melissa Walker is a Miss Walker, is a teacher, librarian, and union rep at McLean Elementary School in Olympia. And that's actually an Olympia Elementary School we're familiar with. There was a, I think this was part of Operation Indoctrination. There was a teacher there we covered on the show, Mix Hamilton, because can't go by Mr. or Miss because Emily Hamilton is they, them. So Mix Hamilton, who, yes, makes they, them's students refer to they, them as Mix Hamilton in what, fourth grade? Yeah, fourth grade teacher. This was a teacher who gave the identity lessons at the very start of the school year. They were going to have a whole activity lesson on pronouns, celebrating names, equality, human rights, and they're going to make these identity posters and all these things for fourth graders at the very beginning of the school year in Mix Emily Hamilton they them's class. That's the same elementary school where we believe Melissa Walker, she, they, her, them, teaches right now. And that is the teacher actively encouraging on social media people to undermine the efforts of the U.S. Department of Education to eradicate DEI from our schools. Paging Donald Trump. Paging Donald Trump. Can you hear me? Paging Donald Trump. Yeah, the Olympia School District. We already got Tumwater School District under investigation. I would argue, though, Olympia School District deserves it much more. You know, let's just save them time. Just investigate OSPI, the entire public school system in Washington State, and let's strip them of federal funding because they are blatantly disregarding what you're doing, Mr. Trump. All right, coming up next, we have an update for you on an exclusive we broke on our show. The Island County prosecuting attorney, as you know, has charged two ballot observers, Republicans ballot observers, with felonies. One of them was in court today, and there continues to be some very suspicious activity around this case. We'll have another exclusive update coming up. First, I've talked about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. I've told you guys, you know, not every weight loss program is right for every person, but I will say for me, having a plan for 60 days, it was hard work, but being able to commit to a plan, knowing what I was supposed to do every day, was something I could stick to. And the weight came off for me so quick that it gave me the motivation to keep going. I mean, I remember like day 9, for some reason I felt just like quitting at day 9. And I was like, well, I'm already down 8 pounds. So at this point, I might as well keep going. And I lost 40 pounds total. I wiped out all the weight I gained during COVID. So before you decide to commit to, you know, those costly injections or diet pills or something, try losing weight the healthy way and in a way that can help you keep it off for life with some simple, healthy lifestyle changes. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, so an update on Tim Hazelow for you. So we covered this extensively on the show. In Island County, Washington, back in the lead up to the November election, there were Republican election observers who were told that they could not observe ballot counting from in the ballot counting room unless they were wearing masks. And of course, that's just stupid. And so they said, look, we're going to go in there anyway. And if we get kicked out, we get kicked out. Tim Hazelow was one of them, and he did indeed get escorted out by the police.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Miller?
What's your name?
Tim Hazelow.
Tim Hazelow?
Yeah. Okay. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've met before.
So, tell me what's going on here.
I'm just observing my civil rights as the observer.
Okay, but as I know, they've made a policy that you wear a mask while you're
which
in here.
Which the RCW doesn't give them the authority to do so.
That's still a policy that's been set. And they've made that very clear to you.
Are you guys going to cite me for being here?
I'm going to ask you to leave.
I'm going to sit here and watch the balloting.
Then I'm going to insist that you leave.
I'm going to sit here and watch the balloting.
No, you're not. Okay? You need to leave.
Are you going to write me a citation?
If I need to.
Then
let's go. The charge is disorderly conduct.
Gotcha.
Okay, you have mandatory court appearance.
Okay.
Do you have any other questions for
no,
me? I'm going to ask you not to return here today.
I won't.
Or you can end up in jail.
Yeah, because what he did there looked so disorderly. So Tim Hazelow was the second Republican ballot observer within the course of a couple days to be removed or let out from that ballot counting center by police. Both of them were cited. Well, Tim was cited on site there with disorderly conduct, which is a misdemeanor. He's still going to fight it. But at the end of the day, a misdemeanor is a misdemeanor and doesn't certainly carry the consequences of a felony. So Tim Hazelow, the other woman who we also had on the show, they were both facing misdemeanor charges. And then they both found out that if they did not plead guilty to that misdemeanor charge, the Island County prosecutor, Greg Banks, would charge them with a felony. A felony for what you just saw there on camera, for refusing to wear a mask and being let out and having a pretty polite conversation with police, a felony, using some obscure RCW about unlawful entry to an election facility, which they weren't in there unlawfully. They literally signed in as ballot observers and were sitting in there for a period of time before police came. So it's all just insane. And we'll catch you up in a moment on some of the background here. But I will say, so Tim Hazelow, and I'm sorry, what is the other woman's name? I was trying to remember what the other, Tracy Abel. They are both going to fight their cases. I mean, felony charges for this is insane. And as you know, the prosecutor for Island County has a pretty long history of hating on Republicans. Again, we'll get to that in a moment. But Tim Hazelow had his first court appearance today on the felony charge. He pleaded not guilty, and he got about 150 of his supporters to join him.
I mean, it's a little ridiculous, but it's the system that we live in, and so we have to go through the process. Unfortunately, as we know, the process can sometimes be the punishment, as we found out with Donald Trump. So we'll just keep on pushing forward. We'll work hard, we'll fight hard, and we definitely won't go down without a fight. We're not gonna bend the knee, so.
Yeah, don't bend the knee. I like everybody with their don't tread on me gear. Love it. I'm sure the prosecutor was pretty triggered during that. So a little bit of background, it's gonna be important to the update if you haven't heard this story on our show before. So the prosecutor on this case, the elected Island County prosecutor, Greg Banks, personally decided he was gonna prosecute this case, which he never does. I mean, we had asked him multiple questions about, you know, is it normal for you to take on cases like this, misdemeanors? Is it normal for you to go to court personally? And he admitted no. But he said this case is basically very important. And it's about, you know, the interference in the administration of a presidential election because the dude wasn't wearing a mask. Okay. But there's a lot of other problems with this prosecution that makes the whole thing seem very corrupt and politically motivated. First is Greg Banks's history. He was in the news during President Trump's first term for going on unhinged rants on social media about Republicans, MAGA, the MAGA movement, and President Donald Trump. He compared MAGA Republicans to the KKK. He called them racist bullies with second grade intellects. He said that we need to cleanse society of their diseased thinking. He talked about it being, it would be collateral damage. Collateral damage is a bitch, referring to the possibility that anti-maskers would die if they visited Disney World. Like, this is unhinged stuff. And again, he was in the news for it, and he ended up taking down his Facebook page and apologizing for it. But we had asked him a very legitimate question. Given your clear disdain for Republicans like Tim and Tracy, for Trump supporters, for anti-maskers, don't you think you ought to recuse yourself from this one? Like, that seems very, I've been covering crime for a long time. That seems like a very clear conflict of interest. And we had reached out to Greg Banks for comment, and he said no. He said, I see no reason to recuse myself. My personal opinions about President Trump expressed during his first term as president are irrelevant to this case involving an act allegedly committed by someone other than President Trump. Which, again, it's not whether you can be impartial. It's whether people can perceive you as impartial. And clearly, people can't perceive him as impartial in a case like this one. Not to mention, he's going to extraordinary lengths to try the case himself personally, a case that started as a misdemeanor, as the elected prosecutor for the county, and then threaten the defendants with felonies if they didn't just acquiesce and admit guilt. And now they're facing felony charges. So here's some strange updates on this case for you. It just gets odder and odder and more red flags of political motivation and lawfare. So first we find out, again, this is an Island County case. So we find out, and we were able to confirm it via a document that had been sent to Tim Hazelow's attorney, that all of the Island County Superior Court judges, all of them, have recused themselves from this case. We do not know why. We have reached out to Island County Superior Court to inquire with the judges or the presiding judge. We have also reached out to Prosecutor Greg Banks to ask, why have all the Island County judges recused themselves? Now, maybe they had a conflict of interest. You know, the case involves the auditor's office, which is a county official. Maybe that's a conflict of interest, but interesting that they would see and be able to identify their own conflicts of interest, yet Greg Banks, who has the biggest, clearest conflict of interest of them all, has not saw fit to recuse himself. But it gets even stranger. So they decide they're going to move this case over to Whatcom County Court, because in Island County, none of the judges there will hear it. So they move this whole thing over to Whatcom County Superior Court. And it gets assigned to a judge named Evan Jones in Whatcom County Superior Court. For some reason, still unknown to us, try as we might to find out why, Island County Prosecutor Greg Banks personally disqualified Whatcom County Superior Court Judge Evan Jones from hearing this case with no public explanation. It says, Gregory Banks, the Island County prosecuting attorney, Pursuant to state law, hereby disqualifies the Honorable Evan Jones, judge of the Superior Court of Whatcom County, a visiting judge. Judge Jones may not hear or try this action, and the presiding judge shall forthwith transfer this matter to another department of this court or call in a judge from another court. Now, this could be, I don't know, a reasonable reason, right? I mean, there could be an explanation here. Maybe they're buddies. Maybe they went to law school together or something. Maybe he knows Tim Haslow. Talked to Tim Haslow this morning. He doesn't know that judge. Here's the other odd thing. Tim Haslow and Tim Haslow's attorney inquired, why was this judge disqualified by the prosecutor from hearing the case? They won't tell them. The order of disqualification that we just showed you doesn't specify. And it does say that the judge can't hear or try the action, and it sounds like the judge can't even appeal this decision. The judge is just kicked off by the shady prosecutor. We've reached out again. We've asked Greg Banks, why did you seek to have this judge disqualified? We've also reached out to the court. Why was this judge disqualified? I would like to know, given some of the real shady, suspicious stuff happening in this case, given the fact that there shouldn't even be a case to begin with, because there never should have been a mask order to begin with, and given the fact that the Island County prosecutor certainly shouldn't be the one trying the case, given his disdain for Republicans, Trump supporters, and anti-maskers, there's already enough going on. Now you have the entire bench for Island County recusing themselves. And when it's sent to a new judge in Whatcom County, the prosecutor says, yeah, that judge is disqualified. This is crazy. Now, maybe there's innocent explanations for all of this, but I will say, again, the beginning of my career, all I covered was crime and justice, in and out of courtrooms every single day. I've never seen anything like this. Never seen anything like this. It's insane to me. And so this stinks to high heaven. We already know it's politically motivated lawfare. And I don't know what kind of public pressure campaign it's going to take for Greg Banks to A, recuse himself, or B, drop the charges entirely. But I will tell you, we have these inquiries out. What's going on with the judges in the Tim Haslow case? And we hope that we will get some sort of answer. And that the answer isn't, I'm not telling you, because I could see that happening. All right. I want to talk about rent control really quickly, because I'm actually very proud of Como News. So one of the things we've noted is, so there's this rent control bill that's still alive in Olympia, and the media will not call it rent control. Because what do the Democrats call it? Rent stabilization. Because they know rent control has a bad, you know, mumbo jumbo. They're like, people don't like the phrase rent control, so they just call it something else, and the media parrots their talking points. So it doesn't make it sound as bad. Oh, we're just stabilizing rents. We're not controlling rents. We're stabilizing rents. Just as a reminder, it's House Bill 1217. The bill says the legislature declares that failure to act urgently to protect Washingtonians from excessive rent increases will result in continued harm for millions of residents, especially when considering the essential nature of housing. And so it would cap rent increases at 7%. You know, there would be a period of time where you'd have to provide ample notice of that. And we've already talked about the clear problems with rent control. Is it's going to increase the cost of rent. So it's going to have the opposite of the intended impact. And then what you're going to have landlords do is they're just going to max out their increases every year, because they're going to have to hedge their bets for issues that might arise the next year. And they're just going to say, okay, every time I'm going to go to my tenant when I can, and I'm going to increase their rent by 7%, even if they don't need to in the moment. So it's going to lead to higher rents for tenants because they put landlords in this untenable situation. So Como News does a great story. Good job, Chris Daniels at Como News. Chris is one of the only ones I trust still. There's like three left. They're dwindling by the day. But they went and they compared how rent stabilization, rent control, which they actually use the phrase, in Minneapolis has worked out. Turns out, not so well.
House Bill 1217 seeks to cap annual rent rate hikes by 7% and limit move-in fees, security deposits, and late fees. The bill's 35 sponsors argue it will help to make housing more affordable as rents continue to climb. But opponents suggest it will actually slow down new construction, deterring investors and developers from investing in Washington, pointing to St. Paul, Minnesota, where new apartment development slowed by more than 80% after a rate stabilization bill.
Governor Ferguson has come out and stated that he wants to build 200,000 units in his first 4 years in office, and that's going to be drastically harder for him and the industry to do if this rent cap bill does move forward.
But why?
Most importantly, It creates a lot of uncertainty for the development community.
Yeah. So it's going to raise rents. It's going to reduce the availability of housing. So when they say that it's about protecting Washingtonians from excessive rent increases, which would result in continued harm for millions of residents, it's going to literally do the opposite. It's not going to protect residents from rent increases. In fact, it's going to lead to more perhaps unnecessary rent increases as landlords have to hedge their bets. Fewer people are going to build in our state. There was a builder who testified before one of the committees who said, if we pass this, it'll be less advantageous for builders to build here than in Oregon or California. Yet we'll have a worse environment to build new housing than Oregon and California. There is quite literally no evidence of long-term help in lowering rents with any rent control policy that's ever been implemented in any jurisdiction. You can look at a short-term benefit, but the second that landlord's able to increase rent again, they're maxing it out every single time. Landlords, under all these other restrictions, they're just going to sell. They're just going to sell, and they'll maybe invest in a different area of the country that doesn't have such insane laws, and then the builders aren't going to build. So as much as Democrats complain about the housing crisis, you want to make the housing crisis worse, you pass rent control. And hopefully, Bob Ferguson, who again, as was pointed out in that story, has these lofty efforts to try to build all this new housing, hopefully someone who he trusts is in his ear saying, you will not accomplish that goal if you sign the rent control bill. Because I think Democrats are going to send it to his desk. The question is he going to sign it? All right, coming up next in our segment, unbelievable shock of the century. The CCA, the Climate Commitment Act, isn't actually helping the climate. Gosh, that's weird. I just wouldn't have expected that. I have told you guys over and over and over and over and over again to take the First Mark Challenge. It is such a no-brainer. We all need insurance. We all hopefully have insurance. But do you have the right insurance at the right price? Well, First Mark can help you figure that out for free. It just takes a phone call. Schedule about a half hour to an hour to do the First Mark Challenge. You'll go over your current insurance with them, talk about your insurance needs, things you have that you need to insure. They'll take some time, usually takes about 2 weeks. They go out, they shop the market, and they come back to you with their recommendations. And we've heard, first of all, we only positive feedback from undivided viewers and listeners about First Mark Insurance, even from those who didn't eventually go with First Mark. Margo told us that she took the First Mark Challenge, and they actually came back and told her, your insurance you have is pretty good, I'd keep it. To me, that's the sign of an honest company. And then you have people like Eric who said that First Mark saved him 30% on his auto policy and 70% on his homeowner's policy. He says, I now tell anyone I know who's dealing with changes to their insurance to give First Mark a call. I did, and I'm truly richer for it. That's what we want. We want to save you money. We want to make you richer. We want to save you enough money where you freeloaders subscribe to the Undivided Podcast for $5 a month. So I'm sorry, if our commercials on First Mark save you 70% off your homeowner's policy, you better be turning around and subscribing to Undivided if you don't already. Everyone, I just fit a commercial for Undivided into my First Mark. One day First Mark's going to call me and say, can you stop making our commercials a commercial for you? And I'm going to say, no. Click. Okay, so the Climate Commitment Act, which voters for some crazy reason decided not to repeal in November, is supposed to be about what? Reducing carbon emissions, helping our climate. That's like the key goal of it, right? That's why we're taxing polluters, right? Because the idea is then there's less pollution going into the air. And so then, you know, yeah, climate better and stuff, right? Well, maybe not so much. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. Great story from our friends over at the Center Square. And they have found out almost 90% of CCA-funded projects in Washington don't do anything to reduce carbon emissions. Wow. I'm skeptical of the CCA. I didn't even think it'd be 90%. I was thinking, I bet you it's 50-50. I bet 50% just goes to nonsense projects and then 50% specifically aimed at reducing carbon emissions. No, 90% don't do anything toward the key intention of the Climate Commitment Act. So if you're not familiar with the CCA, a little bit of background here. So they passed the Climate Commitment Act and it taxes polluters by basically selling these credits at auction. And if you have to pollute, then you buy these credits at auction. And there's only over time, there'll be fewer and fewer credits available. And so it's supposed to encourage companies to go toward other ways of producing and manufacturing. And then that money, of course, has been passed along to us at the gas pump. So that's why our gas prices are so high, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So from the Center Square, the CCA requires that at least 35% of auction revenue is invested in, and we're talking hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars that they've made through the CCA at these auctions. The CCA requires that at least 35% of auction revenue is invested in projects that, quote, directly benefit vulnerable populations within overburdened communities. Ecology's report noted that just $53 million, or 11% of total CCA spending, went toward projects with readily calculable emissions reductions, while 63% of CCA spending was on projects concerning, quote, vulnerable populations within the boundaries of overburdened communities. So 35% is supposed to go to these vulnerable populations within overburdened communities, DEI, right? 63% is essentially going to these, like, DEI climate justice efforts. And 11%, only $53 million of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions, has gone to actually reducing carbon emissions in our atmosphere. For those of you who didn't vote to repeal the CCA, don't you feel a little dumb now? We knew this. This is a slush fund for Democrats. It's going to climate justice projects in Seattle and King County. What was the other thing it went to in Tacoma? Oh, air monitors, as if we don't all have an air quality monitor literally on our cell phones. And monitoring the air quality doesn't actually do something to improve the air quality. It just tells us, oh, the air quality's bad. And that's why we're all paying higher prices at the pump, so they can funnel 63% of the money we've coughed up at the gas pump and in our increased energy bills and the increased cost of groceries, so they can give it to essentially climate justice projects in vulnerable populations within overburdened communities. They're not doing anything to help the climate. They're patting the pockets of their cronies and their allies and all these nonsense progressive organizations that live off taxpayer funds. Unreal. I didn't even expect it to be that bad. 11%. And also 11% of total CCA spending that went toward projects with readily calculable emissions reductions. But how much did it reduce emissions? Because right. It can go to a project that reduces emissions. But how much? Negligible, because we know, we already read the study, that even if they accomplish all of their climate goals on time or early, are the global temperature, it would have a negligible impact on the global temperature and on global emissions. And they're doing it just to A, feel good, B, make other people think that they're helping the environment. And it's really just making the middle class poor. Wild stuff. Unbelievable, you might even say. All right, let's get to some national news here momentarily. First, don't forget our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. We have a new episode of Doge Watch with Zach Abraham coming out tonight, so make sure to catch that. And Zach is having a first 100 days live webinar coming up on March 20th. So that's coming up pretty quickly, but you can still register. It's totally free. Register at knowyourriskradio.com. So this is really about making sure that you have all the knowledge you need when it comes to your retirement portfolio. You only get one retirement. And so there's a ton of stuff happening right now in the first 100 days of the Trump administration, you know, on the economy and the markets and the tariffs and all of that. So Zach and his team are going to discuss all of that, answer any questions that you might have. They'll do a longer term outlook for 2025. And then, of course, they'll give you a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So run your portfolio through a Department of Retirement Efficiency with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, starting with Zach's first 100 days live webinar, Thursday, March 20th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Register right now. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. That's KnowYourRiskRadio.com. All right. We have to talk about the State of the Union. It's so cool, though, because for the first time I've been on the House floor, because I saw it for the first time in D.C. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I said when I saw the House floor is it is so small in here.
Oh, yeah.
And then you watch it on TV. It looks huge. Oh, my God. It looks a tenth of the size in person. It's so bizarre. So I'm like, how are all those people fitting in there?
I didn't know that was your first time.
Yeah, because they don't let a lot of people on the House floor. You have to have like the congressional staffer with Dan Newhouse's office that took us. He hadn't even been on the House floor before. So it was his first time when we went. So it's not part of the normal Capitol Hill tour. But so speaking of the State of the Union, I thought was great. We'll talk a little bit in a moment about how you guys thought the State of the Union address went. A little long, right? But Democrats were completely unhinged. I mean, we've seen unhinged, like Nancy Pelosi tearing up the speech behind mm-hmm. Donald Trump. Like, we've seen petulant children. This was on another level. Usually with State of the Unions, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, you know, they always tell these nice stories about Americans and they have them in the room to honor them. Usually everyone claps for those. Like, usually those are non-political. And that was the case here. But even Donald Trump, I mean, towards the beginning of his speech, he said, I know Democrats aren't going to clap or celebrate anything that I say here. Here's a clip.
This is my fifth such speech to Congress. And once again, I look at the Democrats in front of me and I realize there is absolutely nothing I can say to make them happy or to make them stand or smile or applaud. Nothing I can do. I could find a cure to the most devastating disease, a disease that would wipe out entire nations, or announce the answers to the greatest economy in history, or the stoppage of crime to the lowest levels ever recorded. And these people sitting right here will not clap, will not stand, and certainly will not cheer for these astronomical achievements. They won't do it, no matter what. Five times I've been up here. It's very sad, and it just shouldn't be this way.
And he was mostly right. So, I mean, no brainer, and you guys know this, you've probably seen all the clips by now, he wouldn't stand for the families of children who were killed by illegal immigrants, wouldn't stand for the little boy with brain cancer who he made a Secret Service agent. Like, there was like maybe one or two Democrats who stood for that. Wouldn't stand when he announced the arrest of one of the terrorists who was behind the Abbey Gate blast that killed American service members. What else? Wouldn't stand for the girl who got a traumatic brain injury by playing a boy in volleyball. The guy who got escorted out for screaming at Trump. All these things. I mean, there was quite literally nothing that Democrats would stand for except when Donald Trump talked about all the money the United States has given to Ukraine.
The United States has sent hundreds of billions of dollars to support Ukraine's defense with no security, with no anything.
Listen to them clap. That's Democrats clapping. Don't clap for children with cancer.
Do you want to keep it going for another 5 years? Yeah, you would say Pocahontas says yes.
Yeah, and then Elizabeth Warren just sat there, kept clapping. But they don't realize how silly. I mean, I wish he wouldn't have said Pocahontas just because they were so horrible and petulant that I think, you know, he didn't need to, like, give them a reason to call him the same. But all the things that I mentioned should be totally nonpartisan. Even arresting terrorists, like a big announcement. And the only thing they'll clap for is giving money to Ukraine. That's truly insane. And even Senator John Fetterman, who we can count on being morally consistent, he said it was a sad cavalcade of cell phones and unhinged petulance. It only makes Trump look more presidential and restrained. We're becoming the metaphorical car alarms that nobody pays attention to. And it may not be the winning message. I like that. The metaphorical car alarms nobody pays attention to when they're just meh, meh. You're like, I don't know. It might be mine, but I don't care it very much. I'm sure no one's breaking in. It's probably a cat jumped on a hood somewhere. Thank God for John Fetterman.
Did you ever think you would say that?
No, it's crazy.
Crazy.
Everyone can be redeemed. Even Mike Pence liked Donald Trump's State of the Union. And we know that there's no love lost between the two of them. He tweeted out, congratulations to President Trump on a strong joint address to Congress last night. Support for our armed forces, secure borders, openness to continue negotiations with Ukraine, and word that a terrorist involved in the Abbey Gate attack that claimed the lives of 13 American service members will face American justice were all welcome news. Having the president recognize so many inspiring Americans, like young DJ Daniels, was truly moving. There will be plenty of time for the debate between tariffs, tax cuts, and spending, but for now, well done, Mr. President. Even Pence liked it. Even old stuffy Pence liked it. Mm-hmm. So someone who did not like it, not one bit, is Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of our state. These Democrats, they were like making these totally fake gestures, totally phony gestures. They'd get up and walk out. I'm just leaving. And then, of course, they'd be met by their social media person in the hallway, and they would promptly record a social media video explaining why they just had to leave that room.
I just walked out of Trump's address, joint address to Congress. I went there because I was insistent that I wanted to hear directly from him what he had to say. But after hearing him spew lie after lie after lie, racism and xenophobia at the center of everything, I walked out. And I'm going to insist that we stand up for our constituents, for the American people across this country, and fight back so that we can make sure we're delivering for working people everywhere.
Yeah, I heard nothing racist, nothing xenophobic.
I didn't even hear lies.
No, it was funny. You were talking earlier, you were reading the Associated Press fact check, mm-hmm. but it was republished in the Seattle Times, and they were talking about, it was like opinions, basically. Like Trump said he was handed a horrible economy, and they said, that's not true. And it's like, wasn't that kind of an opinion, right? Mm-hmm. It was an economy built on a house of cards. They were basically taking his opinions or characterizations of issues and calling them mistruths, which was just so typical and so weird. But I quite enjoyed it. Should we do our daily subscriber show poll right now?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. I asked you guys to give President Donald Trump's State of the Union address a letter grade. A, B, C, D, or F. Why is E not in there? What happened to E?
I know. Isn't that a funny thing?
Why is that? There's got to be a reason.
I don't know.
Maybe that person was a graduate of the Olympia School District and they just forgot the E. I don't know.
Maybe because it's too easy to turn into a B.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But I guess an F kind of is too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you say, Nicole? A, B, C, D, F.
I mean, I'd probably give it like an A minus.
I didn't. That wasn't an option.
Okay. I'll give it an A.
Okay, fine.
I'm fine with an A.
Typical.
I thought
Nicole.
He was pretty reserved.
Yeah.
I thought it was highlighting some fabulous people that deserve some highlighting. I know that there's some criticism of it being a show, but they're always a show. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Biden put on a show, too. It does get a little weird when they're like, you get a college degree, you get a badge or whatever.
Oh,
but.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's cute. I thought it was kind of endearing or something.
Yeah, so. There's always anyway, those. All of the presidents do those.
I thought it was good. I literally was eating popcorn.
Yeah. He had some funny lines. I will give it a B only because, again, far too long. That man does not know how to be concise. Yeah, way too long. It was the longest one ever.
It was.
In the history of America.
But don't the people clapping and cheering and hollering and getting escorted out, don't they have something to do with that? That
well,
it goes
yes,
on so long. And
but that's true for every president. There's these long extended applause lines. Mm-hmm. And so he still went longer than normal, even with the applause. He's just...
I know.
It was a long time.
Oh, yeah. He talks a lot. I don't know. Like I said, it was popcorn.
Yeah. I'll give him a B for length and for the Pocahontas thing.
Okay.
I just don't like it. Let's see. Greg P. says he thought it was too divisive. I did not find it divisive.
No, I thought by starting it that way, he kind of toned down the divisiveness, saying there's nothing. I realize there's nothing I can say, so I'm going to control what I can control. I thought that he stuck to things that weren't lies. So when she came out there and said lie after lie after lie, that was pre-planned for her to say that. Xenophobic, blah, blah, blah. That was all pre-planned, and it didn't play out.
Yeah.
So she went with her original script, but that wasn't what he was saying at all. So
I just walked out as if it was spontaneous.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep.
Bill Swick, I loved it. The way he turned his head to good side, bad side of the auditorium, kicking out the detractors, the out of here thumb gesture by Vance. I did like that. Although J.D. Vance's suit was not well... It's all wrinkly in the crotch area, and his belt was all weird looking. He just looked kind of sloppy.
Although I saw people say that he was wearing jeans, and I don't believe those are jeans. Those were pants. So.
Yeah, no, I didn't think he was wearing jeans.
They're trying to pretend they
were jeans. Alice, sometimes he's not very presidential, although people voted for him because he is what you see, or what you see is what you get. The women in the D party are like a bunch of mean girls. What an embarrassment. And how dare they sit there and wear pink when they all just voted against women? Like, give me a break. Mm-hmm. And by the way, 59% of people giving him an A, 32% a B, 7% a C, 1% a D, and 1% an F.
Mm.
There were a couple detractors in there. Park, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. The childish antics of our elected representatives is repulsive and reprehensible. We deserve better than that. And Murray not even showing up. I can only hope she gets my thoughts and prayers when...
That's violent.
I think that the not showing up is just an attention grab. Like, then she got, you know, then she made the news because she wasn't
going.
It's all just so narcissistic.
Yeah. Let me see. Aztec Sun God said, I can't stand to watch him read out loud, like off the prompter. They all read off the prompter. Some are better than others. Some are better at reading off the prompter than others.
I actually thought some of his lines off the prompter were the funniest.
Oh, yeah. He had this. Oh, no, it's insanity check for today. Yeah, I'll leave it. We're ending the show with, I think, his best quote. Steven says, I'd like to give the D's an F. They were so childish. And in for the sake of moral consistency, I spoke out when Marjorie Taylor Greene was shouting. And when what's the other Lauren Boebert and all of that. So, I mean, I think that you expect a level of decorum. It doesn't mean you can't sit, I guess, and not applaud children with cancer. You do you. But I think I remember one of the first big like outcries was when somebody called Obama a liar. Remember that? Mm-hmm. It's like liar. And the whole gallery was like, oh, because back then that was considered just, and that wasn't that long ago. It was like, oh, you just don't do that. So unfortunately it's become more common and more acceptable, I guess, which I don't know how we go back to how it was, but I agree with you guys. Maybe not an A because I don't think he's a particularly good speaker, but he was entertaining. So I give him a B and I'm always right. So no,
I'll give that one to you.
Okay, great. That I'm always right.
It was really nice. Oh, mostly. Except for when I win occasionally. Doesn't happen often.
You've never won. No, I'm just kidding. Only the listeners side with you. I feel like they always side with you when we have a disagreement, which is fine. It's fine. I'm not hurt by it.
Usually on opinions.
Not hurt by it. Okay, we'll get to subscriber comments for the show and our closing sanity check, which is my favorite line from the State of the Union address last night. It was quite good. First, if you're selling your home at some point this year, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. The spring real estate market is heating up. March, May, those are going to be some of the best times of the year to list a home. So a couple things you need to know. A lot of people are assuming the market is slow right now, but the real issue is low inventory, not low buyer demand. So homes that do hit the market are selling quickly due to pent-up buyer demand and limited options. So sellers are facing less competition right now, making it a really advantageous time to list. Now, you do need to know that homes that are properly prepared for listing and priced correctly are performing the best. So Wes Jones can help you out with both of those things. His Listing Boost concierge service is awesome. You know, you might need to make some cosmetic upgrades to your home to make it really stand out on the market. With the concierge service, you can pay for that at closing, which is a really nice way to go about it. Take some of the stress off, especially if you don't have a bunch of money to come out of pocket before the sale closes. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. That's pretty good.
That was good.
Okay. Anyway.
I think he'll like it.
Willie? I don't know. He was just messaging me last night saying he was traveling and catching up on podcasts. So we'll see what he has to say about that little ditty I wrote there.
I think he called you angelic.
When I sang him happy birthday. Yeah, I mean, obviously. Mm-hmm. Matt Gilbert, $10 super chat. President Trump brought it up last night, but we all know that the common sense revolution started with Brandy. Thank you. I take
Matt just kissing butt there.
Well, it's better than his pervy ones that he usually does. Pat Caldwell, it makes us feel unsafe as legal citizens talking about sanctuary policies. The media stopped publishing pics and resident status, so they're thwarting the safety of Americans. Yeah, I agree. And undermining it. You know how hard it is as a reporter to find out if a criminal who's been arrested is an illegal alien? Somebody has to leak it. Like, that's the only way that we find out. It's just wild. Todd, the state of Washington withholds funding to cities and counties when they don't enact all of the legislature's and other agency rules, laws, and regulations. It is the same for the federal government. Yeah, I mean, the state will punish places that aren't enacting what they want them to enact, but the federal government can't punish states. I mean, look, I don't want to lose federal funding, but I think it's a good tool to use as leverage to get some of these common sense things done. Jeffrey, LOL, they weren't wearing masks either while being in a mask-controlled environment and citing someone doing the same thing. How ironic, talking about the ballot observers, how they were arrested by cops who weren't wearing masks while getting arrested for not wearing masks in that room. I mean, that's like Exhibit A at trial, right? Mm-hmm. Is that not Exhibit A? And Exhibit B is the news footage of some old guy being allowed to be in there without a mask.
I was trying to look up more on the judge that is disqualified in Whatcom County. And he was supported by a lot of law enforcement agencies and did not have the support of a lot of prosecutor or a lot of
leftist
elected officials. So
he was deemed too Republican, maybe. I don't want to assume.
I'm not assuming anything. I'm just saying I looked at some of his endorsements and some of his competition. Interesting.
We're going to find out. We're going to get to the bottom of it. All right. Justice says our kids are behind in pretty much every subject, but thank God they know everyone's pronouns. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Amen. Johnny, state of Washington's governor is responsible for this, letting Seattle's mayor go against ICE's corruption, starting with the governor of the state. I mean, and the previous governor and the governor before that. I mean, sanctuary policies were signed into law statewide under Inslee. But, you know, cities have kind of engaged in this sort of behavior for a long time, and they all have the same opinion. And Bob Ferguson has the same opinion, too. So, and it's ridiculous, because, again, I said there's so much gray area there. Nobody's saying that you have to go around stopping people with brown skin, asking them for their documents to prove that they're in the country legally. Like, that's what they want to act as, is like, we don't want to do that. So you can't help get somebody who stabbed four people out of the country, child rapists out of the country. Like, you see, that doesn't make any sense.
It just doesn't make,
it's not common sense. Sean, this will get so overturned, even if it goes all the way the prosecutor wants. Oh, yeah, the masking thing. Georgette, the prosecutor is obviously corrupt and a Dem. He should be fired. Papa Woody, $5 super chat. If you check what that man said at 1 minute and 1 second, death to you all is what he said. What is he talking about there? I saw that super chat come in. Who's saying death to you all? Papa, what are you going to have to clarify? Because yeah, I saw your comment. I'm like, what video did you hear that in? Baron of Gray Matter, $2 super chat. F. Fetterman, he voted against women and girls. Yeah, that was disappointing. But, you know,
I don't know where bound that came to make from. Some mistakes. I really mistakes. Thought he was going to get that one right.
Yeah. Trippy Hippie, Elizabeth Warhawk Warren. Two ladies Midwest. Pocahontas is kind of one of the original nicknames. Donald Trump doesn't give people nicknames as much anymore. I kind of miss that a little bit.
Okay, well, he as was doing it. I'm pretty place. Sure you hated it, but now you like it. That's funny.
Ron DeSanctimonious.
I think he still uses them when they're appropriate. There's just not a lot of new people to make fun of because they're all old. Can you believe Nancy Pelosi and the ripping of the thing? That video kept popping up, and then her in the
gallery.
Sitting down there looking really old.
Justin
Wow,
Adventures.
The last, what, has that been like 6 years? Yeah. I've not been good to her.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah, a little stressful there. I guess I shouldn't talk. I mean, I don't know how I'm going to look
happens,
at her age.
I guess. But
probably won't be in Congress at her
but again,
age.
But again, we just need to, let's get some
age
new people.
Limits. Two ladies Midwest Adventures. This is for Nicole in amazing blue today. $10. And your hair is spot on today too, Brandy. Thank you. Much love from all of us here. Is that blue or is it more purple?
It's kind of an in-between. It looks blue indigo? On the screen for sure.
All right. Chuck. Were you at the Kraken game last night? I thought I saw you a few rows ahead of me. I sure was, Chuck.
Why didn't you say
hi? Why didn't you say hi? I was there with my friend Nancy. I had a lot of people say hi, and I had some nice conversations with folks who watch the show and subscribe. And aww. I always love meeting subscribers in the wild.
Yeah.
Kraken game was fun.
Was it fun this time?
Totally. Well, last time I went, it was the LGBTQ+2IAS night, which is fine, right?
No,
it's not.
Leave it out of sports.
Look, I just wanted to watch the hockey game. And last time it was like every break, everything, every jersey, every graphic, everything was gay, 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 gay. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, I get it. Like, I'm just trying to watch them fight. What do you want from me? And then the Kraken lost last night. And I'm like, it was a very tame game. Mm-hmm. I was like, if you guys are going to lose, you might as well punch someone. That's what I come for.
That's why you're
I come
there.
For the punches. So, yeah. No, Chuck, I was at the game. And I'll probably be at future games. So if those are your seats, I'll get my friend Nancy to invite me back. And the next time you can say hi to us. Nancy has good seats. I was like, dang, girl. How much do these cost? But they're very good. Anyway, what am I doing right now? Questions are done. Oh, that's right. I act like I don't do this show every single day. Let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, there were a lot of good laugh lines during Trump's State of the Union address last night, but I have to say, this was my favorite one.
The media and our friends in the Democrat Party kept saying we needed new legislation, we must have legislation to secure the border. But it turned out that all we really needed was a new president.
Oh. In case you were wondering, the Democrats did not stand for that one either. No clapping for that one. That has been your closing sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. A reminder, if you have not signed up to support our show already, maybe you're just a freeloader, which is fine. You know, freeloaders are fine, I guess. We cannot do this show without your support and our wonderful subscribers who pay $5 a month to help us keep going. So you can sign up, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and just click the red box that says support the show.
Probably says the Democrat from Texas says that.
Huh.
Somewhere in there.
Okay.
Anyway, we'll, I haven't seen it.
I'll go look back because that would be very inappropriate if you said that. All right, that's it, you guys. I'll see you back on the live show tomorrow at noon. Love you all. Value you. I value your presence here today. That's it. That's all I got. Nicole looks at me like, can I mute the mic yet? Yeah, fine. I got nothing else to say.